Muppet character on the Thames television series Rainbow. And I've done that now for, gosh, I think it's over 20 years. Zippy was the character that I portrayed, and he's actually behind me. I don't even see him in the background there. And so he's really, people say, what is he? And I say, well, in fact, I worked with Roy Skelton, who originally did the voice for a long time on Rainbow. And we worked out, because we had people writing into the programme saying, well, what is Zippy? We know what George is, the other puppet character. He's a hippo. But what is Zippy? So, and we decided between us that we'd call him a unique. He's not a frog. He's not anything, you know, he is unique. So that's what Zippy is. And he's, I suppose, for those who want to know about the puppets, he's a sort of Muppet-type puppet. He's what we call a lip-sync puppet. You know, I put my hand inside and I work the mouth and his mouth goes. And that's what Zippy is. But his character, he's very, very naughty. When I say naughty, he knows everything. He's a know-all. He's quite chatterboxy. I mean, he chats all the time. And probably knows everything so well that if Jeffrey, the presenter of the programme, would ask him a question or something, he'd say, well, I know all about that. And I know more and I can tell you everything. He was just one of those type of characters. Slightly annoying, but everybody's favourite, it seems. So there you go. Slightly naughty character with Zippy. I got sort of cast on Rainbow. It's an interesting story, really. I wasn't the original puppeteer on the programme. The original puppeteer was a lady called Violet Philpott. And then, sadly, after the second, no, after the, I think at the end of the first series, maybe, she did something to her back. She injured her back. And so another puppeteer came in called John Thurtle, and he took over working Zippy. And about in sort of early 1970, I'm just looking at my notes, 73, John phoned me up. I knew John. As puppeteers, we all sort of know each other, really. And he phoned me up and said, look, Ronnie, I've got so much work on, I won't be able to do operating Zippy. Would you like to come in and do Zippy? And I went, oh, I'd love to. Because I'd done television in the past, but not a series, as it were. So this was a, you know, one step up. I thought this would be good. So he said, we'll have to have an interview with Pamela Lonsdale, but I'm sure she'll find you, you know, great for the job. Anyway, so that's what I did. John, by the way, and his partner were working on a series called Button Moon, which is, again, quite a favourite Thames television, you know, young children's programme. And he, so he was making the puppets, his partner was writing the show. So, I mean, you know, that takes a lot of time. And so hence, that's the reason why he left the programme, got me going. So I went up to Pamela Lonsdale at Teddington Studios, her office there, and I met her. And she sort of said, you know, how much television work have you done? And I said, well, not a lot, but I've done the odd, you know, I know what a studio looks like and I know what a camera is like and blah, blah. And she said, oh, he's very good. And she said, have you worked with any other sort of television favourite characters? And I said, well, funny enough, I worked with a company called the Hogarth Puppets. Now, they were very famous for the first television puppet icon, if you like, Muffin the Mule. And her eyes lit up. She, oh, wonderful. How marvellous. And so I don't know whether that made... gave me the job. But anyway, she said, well, you must come downstairs and we'll meet the company. It was happened to be a studio day. So they were all, I think it was sort of lunchtime I went. So they were about to finish the, you know, the program they were making at the time. And so I met Jeffrey Hayes, the presenter, Stanley Bates, who was playing Bungle, and lovely Valerie Heatherden, who was playing George. Now, Valerie and I go back a long time. She worked at the Little Angel Puppet Theatre, where I, you know, I was an apprentice for many years and I was working, you know, well, I still work there. So, you know, it was wonderful. And so I knew Valerie, so that was lovely. And of course, I knew John. And we all had lunch together and we all chatted and they all seemed to be very nice people. And then the musicians were there as well. And that was Charlie Dorr and Julian Lippmann and Carl Johnson. And they were the musicians that were, they came in I think on the second series, I may be wrong, but and they were there working at the time. So we all had lunch together. We went up to the canteen and I really thought they were a great team. And I was really looking forward to joining the company. And I think I joined, well, the first program I did, and I'm looking at my notes, was Series 3, 29th of October, 1973. So I think I had an interview probably, it must have been about a few weeks just before that. So I probably would have been in, you know, sort of late summer, September or something. And anyway, I had a couple of weeks to wait before I joined the company. And basically I went home and I watched, turned on Rainbow, because obviously it was on Mondays to Fridays. And I watched every programme, you know, just to get an idea of, you know, what Zippy was like. Although I did sort of know Zippy a bit because I'd seen John doing the programme and I'd watched it because they were mates of mine. And I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. And so I got an idea of how it was all put together. And then the rest is history. I joined, as I say, on that day. And my first programme was about buses or something like that. So that was quite fun. Well, I can tell you about the characters now on Rainbow. On Rainbow at Thames Television, the original characters, there was George, who was a pink hippo, very quiet. He was sort of, oh, he talked a little bit like that. He was really shy. And then, of course, there was Zippy, who was, oh, I know everything, I've been up, you know, and he, you know, he was like that. Now, and you have Bungle Bear, who was an actor inside the bear. Originally, it was a lovely man called John Leeson, and then Stanley Bates took over from John. And then you had the presenter, Geoffrey Hayes. But now the other characters, because what happened was, when Rainbow finished in 1992, Thames Television lost its franchise. And there was a couple of years of sort of, while they were thinking about what they were going to do. And the head of children's had bought what we call the brand, the Rainbow brand, and set up his own company called Tetra Films. And there we had a programme, well, it was based on the characters on Rainbow, Rainbow Days. And that started, I think, in 1996. And that was basically about Bungle, who was made slightly differently. The puppets were slightly redesigned, and there was a new character as well. I went in to perform Zippy. I did actually have to audition, believe it or not. And I went along and they said, well, you'll have to do the voice now. We haven't got the money that Thames Television had. So I went, all right, okay. And so I did my sort of Zippy voice. And they said, oh, that's fine. And I remember sitting with about four other puppeteers, and I actually had a Zippy and George puppet with me for the audition. And the others, you know, were sitting there thinking, oh, well, I don't think we'll all get it. But I did feel a bit sorry for them. Anyway, I got the job. And then, I discovered there was another puppet who was going to come. I mean, the story of Rainbow Days was it was in a shop, and there was Zippy, George and Bungle ran the shop. They looked after the shop, toys and all sorts of stuff. And there was a character that came in called Cleo, and she was a blue rabbit puppet. And this was operated by a puppeteer called Jilly Robick. And it was not made by John Thurtle. John Thurtle made the Zippy and George characters, but this, funny enough, it was made by Richard Robinson. Now, he actually performed Bungle for the first couple of series we did. And he was also a puppeteer as well as being an actor. And so he made the Cleo puppet. And she was, I suppose, you know, she just came in to buy things. She was a bit of a sort of, you know, interested in toys and buying things for, and that was her character. I'd known Jilly the puppeteer because, funny enough, on Rainbow now, going back to the Thames days, we had a character when the actors in the show, Roy Skelton and Geoffrey and the Freddie Marks, they were asked if they'd like to write scripts. And when Roy wrote his scripts, he introduced a character called Zippo, and Zippo was Zippy's cousin, and basically it was one of the older Zippies that we had puppets made every two series, I think. And so we used an older one. We'd usually put a bow tie on him or something like that. And he was Zippy's cousin. And we needed another puppeteer to come in. So Gilly would come in to do that. So I knew Gilly anyway. And also sometimes John Thurtle came in to do the character of Gilly Wasn't Free, or Nigel Plaskett, another puppeteer. So, I mean, it was all worked out quite well. So they're the characters. In the original series, I mean, before I started, and maybe John Leeson has told you about these, there was two other puppet characters called Mooney and Sunshine. And the original voice man on the show was Peter Hawkins, who was famous for doing the voices of Bill and Ben, Captain Pugwash, and, oh, I think he did Mr. Turnip on Whirligig, which was all in the 50s. And he did the voice of Zippy, the original voice of Zippy, before Roy came in. And his voice was for much, much slower when you see the old Zippy. It was sort of that sort of voice, but much slower. And he also did Sunshine, which was a sort of funny little glove puppet with a funny little hat on. And then there was Mooney, who was a little purple sort of character. I'm not quite sure whether he was, what animal he was. And Violet voiced him. And that was rather sweet. But I think it was felt that Sunshine sounded too much like Zippy, and also they didn't evolve the characters. They liked the fact that Zippy was this, you know, know-all and show-off character. So after the second series, I think they were dropped, and so and George came in as the hippo, as you call it, Zippy's foil, if you like. And so that was, so they're all the puppet characters, and they're the different puppeteers who worked them. Okay, well, I think working with Geoffrey Hayes was really lovely. Geoffrey was what you saw on the television, and he was actually very similar to the character. He was sort of playing himself. He was the father figure and looked after this strange collection of animals, if you like. But he was a brilliant character actor. I think a lot of people didn't know this. I mean, his sort of career, he was a sort of jobbing actor. You know, he'd worked in repertory companies when the reps were much more active than they are, you know, in the days then. They're not so active nowadays, sadly. But he also had a part in Zed Cars before he did Rainbow. So he'd done quite a lot of stuff. But he was also a really good character actor. And I think this was proven when some of the programmes, the later programmes, we had a lot of what we call story ones. And the educational side was there, because it was a sort of educational programme. But we wanted the fun. And the fun programmes, there was programmes like Zippy and Bobbin or something. I always forget the titles. And that was basically, when I say Zippy, it was a bit like Batman and Robin. And, you know, Zippy, you know, was, you know, a character. And also in that, Geoffrey played the Joker. If you remember in Batman, there was all these amazing, and he had amazing makeup and stuff. And he was really, you know, really brilliant. He also played a character I always remember in, I think it was Zippy, was very naughty or something, Misbehaving, I think the program was called. And he had long sideburns on. I mean, he looked very different, slightly different, obviously, because, you know, makeup can make you look different. And I remember he was quite cross, and Zippy, you know, he told Zippy on, Zippy was quite upset, and, you know, this never happens, it's this bad. And then what was quite nice, at the end of the programme, he was basically trying to prove to Zippy that actually, you know, if you're a know-all and you're showing off all the time, people are not going to like you. And anyway, he took off one sideburn, but funny enough, in the script, he left this other one on, and Zippy was saying, oh, I think Geoffrey was much nicer than you. He was playing like an uncle or something like that, coming in to look after the boys, as Geoffrey would say to George and Zippy. And then suddenly Zippy notices that he's got this sideburn there, and he realises it's Geoffrey all the time, and I love that sort of thing. When Rainbow finished, sadly, Geoffrey was the face of Rainbow, as it were. And sadly, I think that producers of other programmes and stuff like that, and even theatre shows, said, oh, we can't really use him because he's a face of Rainbow. He's Jeffrey on Rainbow. And basically, all they had to do was, you know, get some makeup on, put a wig on, and he'd be brilliant. But he didn't do so well after Rainbow finished. And he had a family by then. He had a son and his wife, and he was putting his son was going to, as far as I remember, not a state school but a private school. God, it cost quite a lot of money. Anyway, he did get the odd job, and I know in the press people said, oh, he became a taxi driver, or he worked in Tesco's or something like that. He may well have done a short stint of all that, but I think he did, he did try to get other work. But as I say, it was because he was a face. It's one of those weird things, you know, if you're a face on television, you're sort of labelled as that person, and you can't do anything else. It's daft, really, because, of course, as I say, makeup will change everything. But anyway, that was the situation there. Of course, with puppeteers, I'm not a face on, and so I could walk down the street, nobody would know what I do. You probably will now know because doing this podcast, but anyway. So it was, and it's the same for people like Bungle. Bungle always wore the head and the costume, and so we weren't recognised. So in a way, I mean, I used to laugh sometimes if we went out of the studio and we walked down Teddington High Street or something, and somebody said, oh, look, there's Jeffrey from Rainbow. And they totally ignore us because we might have been part of the programme. They didn't know that. So it was good in one way. I think he loved the recognition at the beginning, but afterwards it became the fact that because work didn't come in so much, it was quite hard for him. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword, isn't it, being a sort of presenter on a programme for so long, I think. But again, you know, he had a child, he was a family, he had mortgage to pay for. The job was regular, I was to say, 20 years. I mean, that's quite a record for a children's programme. So we were quite lucky. Anyway, that's the story of Jeffrey, a lovely man to work with. We all got on extremely well, which was really lovely. And I mean, occasionally we'd have arguments, but then it's like a family, you know, but we got over it and it was all fine. So yes, lovely Jeffrey Hayes. And yes, now I've got to try and remember some special guests we had for reading the stories, which was wonderful. And I was thinking about this, and some of them, in the early days, we had people like Dame Judi Dench. She came in and read a story. We had Julian Glover, the actor, who's a lovely character actor. We had, who else did we have? We had, I'm just looking up at my list here because I made some lists of people. Beryl Reid came in and did one, you know, the comedian actress. But people that I remember that I very fondly, there was a lovely character actress called Pat Coombs. She worked with a lot of comedians and things. And we had this character, a regular character, fairly regular anyway, who was Auntie. Who'd come in, she'd be Jeffrey's auntie, and she'd knock and say, oh, hello, I'm coming here. And she'd be reading a story, but she'd usually be part of the plot of the story as well. And Pat Coombs was absolutely lovely to work with. And I remember we used to go in the canteen with her, because we all make friends, really. And she never knew what to eat. She'd be, oh, I don't know, what should I eat? And, you know, she was just a lovely person. And then another lovely actress who we really liked, working, she also played an auntie, was Patsy Rowlands, and she was a wonderful character actress. She appeared in things like lots of Carry On films, and lovely comedian, and she's, again, really lovely. And they've done so much work that they just, you know, it's quite hard to walk into an existing company programme and become part of it straight away. And both those two, because they were such good character actors and such fun, they just took on their parts and were wonderful. I remember just going back to Pat Coombs, she was a bit like, somebody who was telling a palm reader or something like that, and she had this lovely scarf on one programme. I can't really remember, and I remember I was sitting there holding the scarf and by the window and, you know, saying, oh yes, I can read the tea leaves or what. I mean, it was such fun. And Patsy, we used to go and visit her sometimes. I mean, we would just change the set a little bit. And she'd made a specialty. Maybe there was something that Zippy didn't like. and she'd put on the table or something like that. So there's a bit of friction there. But all fun, but really lovely character actors. And some of the storytellers were great fun as well. And when we had, you know, times where we weren't filming, we'd be sitting in what we call the green room, which was quite a small room. But it was such fun, and we were catching up. And I remember, I think, who was it there? There was a wonderful actress who, Felicity Kendall came in. Now, at the time, she was doing this BBC sitcom program, and I loved it. And she came in, and I thought, I'm going to meet Felicity Kendall. You know, and I was terribly excited. And she was charming, really lovely. And I think not long before she'd come in to do our reading the story or whatever, I think the Queen and Prince Philip had visited the BBC studios because they loved that sitcom. And so she was telling us all about that. So that was really exciting. So apart from them obviously being professional and doing their stories, it was really lovely to meet some of these wonderful people, people that I'd sort of grown up with on watched on television and things like that, which was really nice. So yeah, it was an absolute joy to have these people coming in. Okay, yes, now I took over the voice of Zippy for the Tetra film series because basically I think as the head of Thames Children's Television, he was the chap who owned Tetra Films and set up this new programme, Rainbow Days. We also did one called Rainbow afterwards, but I'll tell you about that in a minute. But anyway, getting back to the voice, he said, well, I'm afraid, you know, if you come along, we can't afford, you know, the budget is so small, we won't be able to afford Roy, and we won't have Jeffrey in the show, but we'll just have Bungle, Zippy and George. Basically, as far as they were concerned, they were part of the brand of Rainbow, and that's that. But he said, you will have to do the voice. So, of course, now I'd listened to Roy Skelton mostly right through for, 19 years. I don't know how many years it was. And occasionally when Roy, what happened was at the weekends we had, that was when we were supposed to learn scripts and stuff. But in fact, what happened, for me, it wasn't so difficult. I used to read it through and got to know when, you know, Zippy was going to speak and all the rest of it. I didn't have to say the lines, you know, the Thames shows. But occasionally at weekends, Rainbow got so popular that the company, or the actors were asked, and the puppets usually too, to ask to open fates in, you know, on a Saturday afternoon or something, or can you go and present something with the puppets as well as Jeffrey and Bungle. Anyway, occasionally I'd go along, but Roy couldn't always go. He lived in Brighton, he had two young girls, a family, and you know, it was quite a trek for him to have to come up, you know, to say to London or wherever it was these fates were. And so I used to copy Roy's voice then. So I would do Zippy's voice for that. Hello, everybody. And people never seemed to mind, you know, they seemed to take it on. I think it's interesting. I had a friend the other day and I said, I was talking about me doing Zippy and all the rest of it. And he suddenly said, yes, you know, when I first heard you doing Zippy's voice, you know, you've really matured into it. It's taken you a while. And I said, I'm sure you're right. I mean, I feel it's part of my being, you know, and people didn't say. There were some people I remember on social media when I first did it. They said, oh, Zippy sounds different now. And which is fair enough. You know, I do my copy. I've made it my own now. But because I work the puppet, I think I sort of do the voice, but it's all part of the whole puppet. When you're a puppeteer, you usually do voice the puppet, so it all becomes a sort of natural thing to do. And I think as the years have gone on, and I've now voiced Zippy for quite a long time, I mean, the reason I took Zippy, his voice after the Tetra series finished, was that Fremantle Television, who owned the rights of Rainbow Show, started to do shows or wanted to promote books that they've got. I've got one here. There was Rainbow Unzipped, and they brought out another one. Well, sorry, this isn't Rainbow Unzipped, is it? It's Rainbow Exposed. And I don't know whether you can see this one, Rainbow Unzipped. And we also brought out Christmas cards and mugs. And I've got here, this is quite a fun one, a Zippy teapot, you know, you can pour it, and that's, and then they brought out, as I say, mugs and all this sort of stuff. And so they wanted to promote it. And so we did what we call student union gigs. So we went off to different universities all over the country. We did this for about 3 years, and it was mostly Zippy, George and Bungle. And of course, sadly, while that happened, Roy had passed away. He died a few years ago now. And so, you know, it was down to me to do the voice then. And so I did all these live gigs, and I was, you know, quite happy. And they all loved it, the students. You can imagine, these shows were done, basically, would be about, I think we'd start about 11 o'clock at night or something. And we had a disco. And so George and Zippy had these discs, and it was all pre-recorded, but we pretended to. And we'd sing along with the show. So there was mostly 70s, 80s sound. So it was like, "It's raining men," and all this sort of silly songs. And I can't remember all the different tunes. But so I would be singing with Zippy. My friend Mark Mander, who took over doing George, and he has been doing George for a while, when we do little sort of appearances on different programs, and he did George's voice, so I just concentrated on the Zippy voice. But that, I think, again, doing those shows encouraged me to really practice with getting that Zippy correct. And as I say, working the puppet, doing the voice, it all became to gel together, and that's how I established the Zippy voice. Oh, Jeffrey, you know, all this sort of silliness. But it's lovely to be able to do it. It's great to have taken over, and hopefully I'm doing it well. Okay, right now, we also on the programme, we had a group of musicians. And when I joined, they were, and I'm looking down to get the names right, Charlie Dorr, Julian Littman and Carl Johnson. And they were like more folky in a way. They wrote their own songs. We recorded three programs a week. They had the ideas or the ideas for the scripts in advance, but they had to get together and work out how, you know, different songs for each program. So three songs a week they had to, you know, do. And a lot of the time, I can't remember if Charlie and Julian and Carl, I think sometimes they sang them live in the studio, because they were basically, they didn't always dress up. And latterly, other musicians, they became part of the program and wore lots of different costumes and character things. I think they, in a way, sat there and, you know, on stools or whatever, and played their guitars or whatever. But they left about 3 months after I joined, and Jane Tucker, Rob Burton, and Matthew Corbett joined. And Jane was already an actress, but also played instruments and stuff. So she, and her father was quite a well-known director, television director. So she'd done quite a lot of television and theatre and stuff. Rod wasn't so much an actor at that stage, but they were a couple, Jane and Rod. So they came in together, but he was also a very good musician and turned out to be a fabulous character actor. I think he learned on the programme, if you like, but he was great. And Matthew Corbett, of course, was Harry Corbett's, the man who invented Sooty and Sweep, son. And Matthew had gone to drama school as well. And I think he went to Central School of Speech and Drama. He also played the guitar, obviously, and he could sing. He loved, you know, music. And so they made a really good team. And again, we had three programs a week. They individually wrote different songs. I think if it was three, so that Jane would write the first one maybe, and Rod would write the next one, and Matthew would write that one, and they would join in and sing each other's songs. What they did was they pre-recorded, I don't know, I suppose it would be about 2 weeks before the actual program that the song was going to be used on. And they went up to Thames's sound studios, and they've got all the wonderful equipment, and they pre-recorded the music. They played the music themselves, but they might have added a little bit of echo or something to make it sound really great. And then they mimed when they sang the song in the studio, which also was a help because we were in quite a small studio. In fact, the smallest studio at Thames Teddington, Studio 3. And so the cameras could pull back without having a boom mic coming in. So you could get a nice sort of, it looked as though they were in quite a big studio and they could move around and all the rest of it. So that was quite an advantage in a way to pre-record the songs. Also, everybody, the vision mixer and the lady who was clock watching, the production assistant, she would know exactly how long those songs were going to be because they were pre-recorded, so everything could be timed a bit easier that way. So that was very good. Another thing too was that when Jane and Rod and Matthew came in, there was a bit more involvement of them in the programme. Originally it was, let's hand it over to the singers and they would sing their songs. But when Jane, Rod and Matthew were there, it was a case of they're part of the programme. So Jane would come in and occasionally read a story. Some of their songs, they would dress up as characters. And so that sort of evolved a bit. So they, and sometimes their songs included us. Zippy and George would be in the songs as well. Same with Jeffrey and Bungle. So it was quite a nice thing. It all became one big family. And I think it was decided that Jane, Rod and Matthew lived in a house not too far away, so they could just walk and say, hello, we're here today, we're going to sing a song, that sort of thing. So that was quite fun. And just of just something by the way, Matthew Corbett left the programme because his father, Harry Corbett, had a serious heart attack, and he was presenting Sooty, as it was for Thames Television in the summertime, and that's when we had our break. Anyway, what happened was, I think they thought that the insurance would be too expensive for Harry to present the programme. So they asked if Matthew would present, being Harry's son. And that's what he did. And for me, it was an absolute joy because he asked me if I would work sweep on the programme. Well, I'd grown up with Sooty and Sweep as a kid, so it was an absolute joy. So I'd finish the Rainbow series, then go straight on and do some Sooty and Sweep, which was wonderful. The other nice thing about that was that they had 2 weeks filming on location. We went down to Dorset, and I have some pictures in my book that if you buy the copy, sorry, I'm being very naughty, you can see. And it was lovely doing location filming. I was always studio bound, really, with Rainbow, which was great. But on the other hand, when you're out on location, you've got to think on your feet, as it were, you know, where do you hide? How do they get the camera so that you get the puppeteer out of the way and all that sort of thing? Great fun to do. After Matthew left and after I did the Sooty and Sweeps and things, we had to get another musician. And that was an actor, singer called Roger Walker. And he got the job and he was there probably around probably about 18 months, maybe 2 years, never quite sure how long these people stayed. And Roger left because he got a big part in a big BBC serial that was a brand new one that they were starting. And so he took that job on. And then that's where Freddie Marks came along. So I think most people remember the musicians, Jane, Rod and Freddie. And they sort of forgot that Matthew and Roger were there, but they were, and they did have fun time. And I think it really gelled with Freddie and Jane, Rod and Freddie. I mean, they eventually, as well as performing and, you know, composing these fabulous songs. And again, there was lots of ones where they dressed up as characters and we were involved sometimes. And there were some lovely sets, and it really got more and more, it was just quite involved in a way with the different sets and costumes. Anyway, they eventually left the programme and because they were invited to do their own series. So there was a Jane, Rod and Freddie programme that they did. So they were around Thames Television but doing their own songs. So they, you know, really got, it was very exciting for them. And after that, we had a lovely singer come in, an actress singer called Dawn Bowden. And she was lovely. And she played a sort of electric piano. Everything was a little bit, you know, I mean, perhaps it wasn't quite so lush with you know, we've only got one singer singing, but we'd all join in, sing with her, and she's lovely, and we're great friends today. I'm sort of on social media anyway, so it's really nice to catch up with her. But and that was really nice. So yeah, they were the musicians, and they were a vital part, really, of the programme. We're all very close-knit, as I say, and it worked. I think it made the programme much more interesting, having songs and original songs too. Right, now, what is my favourite episode of Rainbow? Well, one of them was when we invited Ernie Wise, Eric Morecambe and Ernie Wise from The Morecambe Wise Show, to come along and teach Zippy how to tell jokes. Because Zippy, of course, thinks he knows he can do everything, you know. And so, and he was telling a joke at the beginning of the program. He said, "Oh, this happened, blah, 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 blah." And nobody laughed, you know, it was all terribly boring. So they invited Ernie Wise in. And, you know, he was delightful. A total professional. I mean, he'd been in the business for so long. And sadly, it was after Eric Morecambe had died. So it was a sort of, you know, he was doing jobs, I suppose, when, you know, all over the place, really. Anyway, he came in, and the producer, you know, invited him to come in. And I remember for the rehearsals, you know, he came to rehearsals. We used to rehearse in the Yacht Club, which is not far from Teddington Studios. And it was, you know, not terribly wonderful looking place. But anyway, it was, we go upstairs, it was a sort of big hall, and there was a few tables and chairs and stuff. And but he came in, and he, you know, he was really excited about being on the programme. He seemed to know all about everything, and he was lovely to us. And of course, it was great for me because I was doing Zippy, and there was lots of scenes with Zippy and him. And Roy Skelton had written that particular script, so he was over the moon that we'd got Ernie Wise to come in. So and we came in, and he came and rehearsed. You know, we thought, well, I wonder whether he'd just come on the day and do it. But no, he came to rehearsal, so we got it all right. And, you know, we changed things a little bit if we wanted it and all that sort of thing. I remember that we did the programme, and it was lunchtime, and we were going to pre-record something else, and he was going to do the next little bit. And normally we'd either have lunch as a team up in the canteen in Thames, or we might, you know, if it was special, we might go to the restaurant. But this was extra special because the producer said, "No, we're going to have lunch at the executive lounge." And that was for all the, you know, what I always call Lord and Lady Thames, you know, all the posh people, you know, the executives and all that. Anyway, so we went off into this executive lounge, and that was quite fun to have lunch. But he was adorable. And the programme, I think, is very funny. And you can see it either on sort of DVD or YouTube is probably where you'd see it, because there's a lot of Rainbow programs now on streaming on YouTube, and I'm sure that one is there. And I think it's something like, I can't remember the title of it, but it's probably something like Zippy trying to tell a joke, or it's something about jokes. But that was really lovely and very special. And I think the other programs I really like, just briefly, were things like when Pat, you know, I've already mentioned, but Pat Coombs coming in as Auntie. Anybody we had who was quite a characterful actor was always fun to work with. We had another lovely man, I mean, my brain is ticking over now, but a man called John Styles. He was a brilliant Punch and Judy man, but also a sort of musical entertainer. So he had a lot of theatre background, a variety. And he was a joy to come in, and he'd bring in different sorts of ways of telling stories, and he was fun to work with. So yeah, there were some really nice ones, but I suppose, you know, Eric, not many people. I mean, we were very lucky to have had Ernie Wise to come in, and that was a very special day. Certainly was for all of us. I mean, to have lunch in the executive lounge was something very special. Now, I must tell you a little bit about how I started as a puppeteer. Most people think, well, it's a funny job to do, isn't it? Well, basically, this goes right back to when I was a school kid. I used to live in a block of flats with my sister and my mum and dad in South London. And in the summer holidays, the school summer holidays, there was, you know, loads of kids playing about in the flats. And what should we do? And I said, well, I might put a puppet show on. And I had three Pelham puppets. Now, Pelham puppets, you could buy those in toy shops. Sadly, I think the firm is defunct now, but you can still get them. I think they're actually, some of them are worth a lot of money. Anyway, so I had three of those puppets. I had a couple of glove puppets. I think, I don't know where I acquired those. Anyway, what I decided to do, I thought, I'm going to do some entertaining. I think I was always interested in entertaining. I mean, as a kid, I used to watch Sunday Night London Palladium, all these lovely variety shows on the telly. And there were some wonderful artists on that. And I just loved all that. I thought, oh, this is what I want to do. And so I got a kitchen table, a very small one, and I upturned it, put it on its back, and then I used that as a stage, and the four legs were the sort of proscenium arch, all completely dotty, really. And I was given by some auntie or other an old wind-up gramophone record player, and I had some 78s, really old records, and they went 78 speed, so it was quite quick, and I put the record on. And it would be things like Victor Sylvester orchestral music. I wanted proper, fabulous variety music, but I didn't have them. I mean, I was given these whole records, and this is what I had. And I think also had some Gracie Fields songs as well. I don't know where they all came from. Anyway, I did that, and I used to dance the puppets. And we lived on the first floor of the flats, and the stairs going up to the second floor made a great raked auditorium for the kids to sit on. It was all concrete. I don't know if they must have been freezing, but anyway, they didn't seem to mind. And they seemed to quite like me doing these funny shows. I then started doing the following year. I was probably about, 11, 12, that sort of age, by the time I sort of did all that. And then I bought a Pollux Toy Theatre. Now, they are tiny little theatres about this sort of size, and you had sheets of paper, and they were printed on the characters for the plays, and you could colour them in, and then you'd stick them onto thin cardboard, and then you cut them out, and you have wires with a little clip on the front, and you could put them onto the stage, and they moved like this on the stage, and you just moved them a little bit while they were talking. You had them coming in this side as well. You also had the scenes, and they were slitted, they sort of slotted in through a sort of grid at the top. And this was wonderful, and I remember I learned a really good lesson about performance. I got a book of plays, and one of them was Hamlet, Shakespeare's Hamlet, my goodness. Anyway, and it was based on the film that Laurence Olivier did in, I think, 1948. And so there were little characters, and I cut them all out, and there was the scene that I always remember. It was the ramparts of the castle in Denmark, and there was Horatio, one of the characters in Hamlet, and he was walking up and down with a sentry, I think, or another soldier, the ramparts of the castle, and suddenly the ghost appears of Hamlet's father. And this was on two pieces of cotton I lowered down, because, you know, special effects and stuff. And I had funny old torch lights for the lighting. And I got Quality Street wrappers. and I put those over the bulbs. I mean, nowadays you can get fabulous little tiny, that's what in my youth you couldn't. And I put like red wrappers over there, and that made the lighting. And it seemed to look quite good. And I had cardboard covering me, so I couldn't see the audience. I wanted them just to concentrate on this little piece. Anyway, I was doing the ghost coming down on the ramparts, blah blah. Ooh, I am the ghost, and did all this sort of stuff. And I thought, gosh, the audience are really quiet. They're marvelous. They must be absorbed. I'm absorbed in the show, but they're really good. And I didn't have very many in. It was my bedroom, so I suppose I had about five in maximum sitting on the bed, and I was on a table just in front of that. Anyway, I thought, I did that scene, I put the curtain down, I better go out and see, you know whether they're all right, because they're really, this is wonderful, I must have got them. And I looked around, and they'd all crept out probably about 5 minutes before, bored out of their minds, because I was having a wonderful time doing this show, but it was very boring for them to watch. So big lesson learned, aged about 12 or 13, don't just entertain yourself. If you're an entertainer, you're entertaining the audience. So I always remember that. But doing that, I discovered on the back of the script that on the Hamlet, there was a Pollock's Toy Museum, and they had other theatres and stuff, and I thought, well, that might be interesting to go to one Saturday after school, and I thought I'd go along. And this was in Mond Street in the West End in London, and I went along to this shop, and it was basically a shop where they sold the theatres, but also upstairs was this museum full of puppets and toys and old model theatres. And downstairs they were setting up, there was a gentleman there, setting up an exhibition of old Victorian marionettes. And I thought, this is interesting. Anyway, I saw the museum, came down, he was still there finalising this setup. And I said, where did these puppets come from? And he said, well, I'm the archivist of the British Puppet and Model Theatre Guild. And that's the oldest puppetry organisation in the world. And we have meetings every Tuesday, 7 to 9. And if you're interested in puppets, you must come along. And I said, all right, OK. I think he gave me a brochure or something or of where it was. Anyway, I came home and I thought, this is interesting. I didn't even know there was an organisation for puppeteers to go to or anything like this. And so I went along to the meeting. I mean, obviously my parents allowed me to go, and it wasn't very far from where I lived, actually, so I was quite lucky. It was just a fluke that, and I met a whole lot of different puppeteers, so I began to be really interested in puppetry almost in a professional way. Although I was still quite young, I thought, you know, this is really quite fun. And they were, you know, there was the married couples, you know, they were quite, some of them were quite old, you know, and been doing it for years, and it was fascinating to watch. Anyway, time went on. I went back to school. Didn't like school very much. It was very sporty. I wasn't at all sporty and stuff like that. But anyway, that happened. There was one friend I had who used to go on Saturday mornings to Italia Conti Drama School. He was, obviously they had a bit more money than we did as a family. And so he just went Saturday mornings, but he came back one day and said, do you know they're advertising for Workhouse Boys for a new musical called Oliver? And I went, oh, right, okay. He said, do you want to come along with me? We might be able to get a part, you know. So anyway, I went along to this audition with Alan, my friend, and sadly, I didn't get the part because I was too tall. You had to be shorter than the boy who was playing Oliver. And Alan was quite short, shorter than me. And I wasn't that tall. I can't remember what height I was. Anyway, coming home from that, I then made the decision. I thought, right, I'm restricted because I'm too tall. My body's not right or whatever. But if I do puppets, because I'd already been to the guild and I'd seen various things, I could, my body's not necessary. Nobody would know what my body looked. And I can play a lion or I can play a mouse all in the same play. It'd be fantastic. So, and that in a way, even then, and I was probably, by that time, I was probably about 13, 14, that sort of time. And I started, obviously I was going to senior school then. And I thought, right, my father was a teacher, but he would have loved me to stay on and take exams and stuff like that. But I, in the meantime, had written to Bob Pelham, where I got these marionettes from, and he was still alive, obviously, there. And I said, is there anywhere I can train to be a puppeteer? Because I was really into this puppet thing. And he wrote back and said, there's a puppet theatre in North London called the Little Angel Theatre. Try that. It's run by a man called John Wright. And I thought, fantastic. Anyway, to make a long story short, I was supposed to take exams. I was coming up to 15. And you could leave school at 15 because it was 100 years ago, this is, by the way. Anyway, so I decided that I wouldn't stay on. My parents, well, my father was a little bit dubious about all this, but anyway, somehow I think my mother persuaded him, and that was fine. And I was going to leave because I was going to go and visit the Little Angel Theatre, and I did a few weekends before I actually wrote to him to ask whether he ever took on apprentices. And because I'd been to the guild and I knew a few puppeteers, I think that impressed John Wright a bit, even though I was this young boy. And to make a long story short, I was taken on as John Wright's second apprentice. And you're in a building which was converted from an old temperance hall into a puppet theatre. John Wright was the most brilliant carver of marionette string puppets, but also used glove puppets, rod puppets, shadow puppets, and every mixture of all kinds. So in a building and a theatre, we were using all sorts of puppets. So I got to know, after about 8 months, loads of different kinds of puppets. And I basically was an operator of puppets. I wasn't a maker. I would help in the workshop and I'd sand stuff. I think he thought that, you know, and I wasn't a good, I couldn't draw anything. And they were very beautifully made, these figures. So people who'd been to art school did that sort of stuff. But I got involved in things like the lighting of the theatre. I got involved in the sound. We used to pre-record on reel-to-reel tapes in those days. And I found that fascinating. And John Wright used to choose wonderful music for his productions. One of them was, my favourite, was The Little Mermaid, Hans Andersen's story with marionettes. Beautiful story and a wonderful production. And, you know, choosing the music for that production and how the lighting was done. I didn't do work string puppets straight away. I had to watch and look at John Wright and his wife and other puppeteers working the puppets to learn how it was all done. And then at lunch times, I'd go up and have a work. And I became quite, well, dare I say it, but quite an experienced string puppeteer. And that's helped me in good stead, because although I do most of my work now is sort of the zippy type puppets, I do get asked to do marionette work, string puppets, because there's not so many marionette operators, if you like, around nowadays. So that's my beginnings. I also then performed my own one-man glove puppet show because I enjoyed performance, live performances to young children. And I was asked, John Wright said, well, you know, do your show, because we do shows on Saturday mornings for the very young. And then we have slightly older kids coming in for the afternoons and the early tea time show. So I learned a lot doing that. And then, of course, in those days, I could also go out to schools during the week and do performances in schools and, you know, all sorts of places. And that was, again, a great thing of sort of learning your trade. You know, you start off and you might drop all sorts of props and things go wrong. But after a while, you get really, you know, used to performing and interpreting how the kids would react to each puppet and what you would say back to them and all this sort of stuff. Really wonderful. And so all that helped me. And now I'm teaching all that sort of stuff to new puppeteers, which is wonderful. So I'm sort of paying back what I learned after all those years. Well, I can't remember. I think it was 2017. Two friends of mine, they were actually writers, but they came to the Little Angel Theatre, the theatre that I told you about, and said, Ronnie, we'd love to write a book about you, a biography about your whole life with puppets. And I went, no one's going to be interested in a puppeteer. You know, who's going to publish that? He said, but what we'll do, we'll call it Zippy and Me. And so basically, they wrote all the words. I mean, I spoke to them and they recorded or they wrote down stuff. And I started more or less some of the stuff I've told you on this podcast, how I started with puppets, about my family life and lots of stories about Rainbow and the touring that we did with the puppet theatre. We went to America, we went to Israel, we went all over Europe. Sadly, some of that was cut out on the final book because the publisher said, oh, we want you to get to Rainbow. It's all about Rainbow. And I said, well, yes, but, you know, it's also about my life. I didn't want to, you know, I've done more things just other than Rainbow. And so, and it was really interesting. I mean, from Rainbow, I worked on with Jim Henson. I was lucky to work on Labyrinth, the film, which is now a cult movie, with David Bowie. And I was one of the additional puppeteers doing some of the goblins and things like that. I then went on to work with Christmas Carol, Muppet Christmas Carol, as an additional puppeteer. Same with Muppet Treasure Island. So we did lots of things. And I did Little Shop of Horrors, the movie that Frank Oz directed, who was Miss Piggy on the original Muppet Show. And I also, of course, talk about working with Matthew Corbett and Harry Corbett on the Sooty Show. I talk about working at the Little Angel Theatre and teaching and all sorts of different other things, you know, that I've done. So I'm really quite pleased with the book, and it has actually turned out that people are really enjoying reading, which is very nice. So if you can get a copy, you can get it probably on Amazon or eBay. Sadly, it is now been remaindered, but there are copies about. So if you're lucky, you should be able to get a copy. And if you ever come to a Comic Con, I don't know whether you know about these Comic Cons, but they're all over the country nowadays. And I've been asked to go with Zippy and to go along to those, and I bring books along. And if you haven't bought a book, you could see me there and I would sign it for you, and you'd get a signed copy. So, but yeah, no, I'm really happy with it. I've got my grandchildren in here. I've got pictures of puppets and my early days on the Little Angel. You can't really see, but we may do some close-ups later. But there's some pictures there of me when I was 15, just starting at the Little Angel Theatre. But anyway, and there's lots of other stuff. I have a half-sister. I have also... Anyway, I'm not going to tell you too much. You've got to buy the book. But anyway, it's lovely to have had it. And I never dreamed I'd get a book published. I'm very thankful to my authors, that's Duncan Barrett and Nuala Kulfi, for inviting me to get this book published, which is really great. Right now, what am I doing today and tomorrow and in the future? Well, I am about to start a season with my original glove puppet play called The Snitch and Dodo Show. And I'm doing that at the Barge Puppet Theatre, which is in Little Venice in London. And it's a theatre built on an old barge, and it's 55-seater. And I'm going to be doing this show, I think, mostly at weekends, starting in the middle of November. And then when that finishes, I go up to Norwich Puppet Theatre. There's an old church converted about 35 years ago, maybe even longer, into a puppet theatre, the Norwich Puppet Theatre. And last year I was in a pantomime with marionettes and a big company, and we did Cinderella. And this year we're doing Jack and the Beanstalk, and I'll be there from, I think the show's open at the 9th of December and goes on to the 31st of December. But even before then, I've got, what have I got? Oh yes, I've got some teaching to do for the Little Angel Theatre. The Little Angel Theatre has now got a studios, and it has a foundation course and an intermediate course. And on the foundation course, I do some glove puppet teaching. So I'll be doing some of that. I should be looking at my... Oh, I know. And then I was very lucky to have worked on a film which you can see on Netflix, which is the Pinocchio live-action version of Pinocchio. And that was with Tom Hanks playing Geppetto. And I was, I suppose, Tom Hanks's double. I was working the Pinocchio puppet in the workshop, and we had it specially made. It was all made in America, but we made it over here. And so it looks as though Tom's doing wonderful things with the puppet, but, well, it's me doing wonderful things, but of course Tom is brilliant anyway. Anyway, and the rest of it, after that, it all goes on to CGI, computer-generated images. But that is the one little bit of puppetry there. And then I was very lucky. I mean, this has just sort of happened. While I was doing the Cinderella at Norwich Puppet Theatre, I had this email from a director, producer, saying, we're doing a film called A Quiet Place Day One. And now there was a series of Quiet Place films made a few years ago. And this is the prequel to those two. And we need a puppeteer. We want one who can do a marionette, and you've been recommended. So, and they said, could you just come to an audition, or not audition, come and meet us in London? And I said, no, I can't. I'm doing Cinderella in Norwich, but we can do a Zoom meeting. Anyway, they were delighted to do that. I didn't have a puppet to show them or anything because I was in digs. Anyway, they were very nice, and to make a long story short, I appear as an old puppeteer, and I do a little act with a little boy puppet who blows up a balloon. Quite clever, all this technology. And the balloon gets bigger and bigger, and he floats up in the air, and he floats around the stage, and suddenly the balloon pops, and he falls on the floor, and he looks terribly sad, and he looks up at me. I'm in view as well, and I go, all right, and I pick up his hand, and I'm using the control to work the puppet, and we walk him, and I put him back in his suitcase, and that's the little act I do. But also I do a bit of acting in the puppet studio as well, where I run through, because it's a bit of a, I don't know what you call it, psychological thriller film. It's all quite interesting. Anyway, and that should be coming out next summer, I'm told. It would have been out earlier, but unfortunately there's been a big strike on in America with all the actors and writers and all that. And so a lot of stuff has been sort of stopped, or production stuff has been stopped. So, yeah. Oh, and another film. Oh, my goodness. Sorry, I've got stuff. I've been quite lucky. Beginning of last year, I worked on a film called Shakes vs. Shav. And this is basically a documentary about the centenary of George Bernard Shaw. And he was this playwright, and his very last play that he wrote was a play called Shakes vs. Shav, and it was for puppets. And so they were doing a documentary about his life, but they wanted to include this little puppet play. And so friends of mine had made the characters beautiful puppets, and we did it in Dublin. We had to go to Dublin to film it, so that was fun. And that hopefully might be out in the summer as well. It's already been shown in Ireland, but it hasn't come to London yet, so I'm waiting to see it myself, but it should be quite good. So, believe it or not, I'm really quite busy doing, as I say, theatre and some television. Oh, gosh, I just remember something else. Children in Need. I don't know whether this will go out before Children in Need going out, but on November the 17th, do watch Children in Need, because Zippy and George, Basil Brush, Hacker and Dodge, Mr. Blobby, and somebody from the Teletubbies are going to be acting in a little sequence for Children in Need this year. So, it's been a busy old life, and touch wood, it's still happening and going on. So, yes, it's been wonderful. I've really enjoyed talking to everyone. Hope everyone enjoys what I've had to say and talked about Rainbow and various other bits. And do put comments on the comment bits on the podcast to see whether you liked it or if you didn't like it and there was something else you wanted to know. Anyway, thank you very much. It's been a delight to talk to everyone. Rainbow.